Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Dave.
And we're the hosts of the Chasing Tomorrow podcast, where we bring you stories that delve into the science and spirit behind intriguing people doing extraordinary things.
On today's Chasing Tomorrow podcast, we are very, very excited, both me and Joe, to bring on Rhea Colville. She is an elite OCR athlete, and the 2019 Spartan Ultra World Champion. I want to ask her not only what it's like to do obstacle course racing for 24 hours, but also to be the world's best at it. I am super, super stoked to dig into the mind of the world's best ultra distance obstacle course racer. How are you doing, Rhea?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So Rhea, do you want to tell us a little bit about your background? Where did you grow up? What kind of sports were you involved in as a youth?
Yeah, I grew up in Slovenia, actually. I was there until I finished high school. But I grew up as a gymnast. My mom put me into the gym when I was 5, and I didn't leave until I was 17. It basically was my childhood. I did it at a pretty high level throughout. And then I quit, not necessarily because I wanted to, but because my body and mind kind of said it was enough. And then it took like 4 or 5 years for me to kind of figure out what I want to do with my life. And I gained a lot of weight in the meantime and just did all the things that people usually do over 10 years. I did it in a year. So it was like an interesting period. And then when I went to United States for college, I started running mainly just to get healthy again. I didn't have any really real fitness aspirations in mind other than I would like to not be winded at the top of a staircase. But then the more I ran, the more I fell in love with the sport and trail running. I think I was just kind of naturally good at it. I never ran with people. And then the first race I did pretty well in it. And so the competitive spirit kind of came back, and just mile after mile, kind of the fitness came back as well. And then I accidentally stumbled upon obstacle course racing. I think in 2013, I did the first like fun run, didn't think much of it. And then in 2016, I did an elite race where I actually did really, really well. And I think at that point, I've been running for enough years to have the running endurance. And gymnastics sort of never really left me. So the OCR kind of combines the two pretty perfectly together. And I love them both. So the love was kind of born there. And then I like raced a lot over the next few years. And eventually, I guess, kind of turned, I like accidentally really realized that endurance is really where my love is. So I started focusing more on the longer events and not so much the short hour long fast.
Right. I read somewhere that your very first obstacle course race that you signed up for it because you had a Groupon. So you basically had a coupon to do this race, and you're like, hey, my other friends are doing this. Why don't I try this? Is that right?
Yeah, that's true. I had my guy friends, we formed a team, and I was like, guys, let's do this together, like as a team, let's like have fun, wait for each other at obstacles. And they're like, we don't want to wait for you, like we're just going to be playing to our weaknesses. And then I beat them all to the finish line.
Wow, that's always fun to show them up. We like that.
Yeah.
What I always find fascinating is the training to get ready for obstacle course racing, because you know, as you go farther, you have to sort of mix that anaerobic capability so you can, you know, do the monkey bars, which I think you had one fun incident with, as well as to keep the endurance going. What is the training like to balance out that ability to be able to keep that strength and endurance going at the same time?
Yeah, actually, I feel like because I'm not very anaerobic oriented, I don't have a lot of fast twitch muscle, which I think that's why I kind of gravitated towards the ultra OCR, because in ultra OCR, the goal of getting across the obstacle is going with most efficient as possible, so using the least amount of energy, and it doesn't necessarily matter how fast you cross the obstacle. And I think I have that still from gymnastics, where I have really good body awareness and I know how to swing my body and use the body's momentum to get across a lot of these obstacles. So I don't necessarily use as much anaerobic power to get across those as somebody else who's like more power oriented might be. So the way I train is I just run a lot and then I do upper body strength. Like I do a lot of pull-ups and things. So yeah, that's basically it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So it sounds like your training over the many years and as well to your background is more suited to volume and to, yeah, you know, to, you know, 24-hour racing. Oh, that's so cool. But what also, tell me more about, you know, your youth and your, you know, your background in gymnastics and a lot of maybe your mental approach to this. Do you find that your mental approach, even as a child and as a young adult, and then as a young racer as well too, do you find it really plays well into kind of 24-hour racing?
Yeah, I think gymnastics really has a big part in that, because growing up, like when you would fall at practice, you would get up and do it again, like right away. Like, don't wait until you get scared of the thing, just do it right away. And there was a lot of problem solving. So like when something hurt or when you had a blister, you had to figure out how to get around that problem to still keep practicing. We never really had like much of a break, really. It was like 5 days a week, 365 days a year. So I feel like that really translates well to like endurance OCR, because there is a lot of problem solving when like something, like when you fall off of an obstacle, well, you have like 15 more laps to do the obstacle, so you better try it again right away. So right. I feel like a lot of that, and also like I feel like you need to be very stubborn to do gymnastics as a kid through your childhood, and I feel like that's just kind of the trait that I have. I'm like too stubborn to quit, so I will try everything and try and fix whatever I can fix, like take things together until I get to the finish line.
Right, and I also picked up something else there as well, because I was, you know, listening to one of your videos prior, and you know, with gymnastics, in what I think, and tell me if I'm wrong, is you kind of have to be able to forget, you know, what just happened, and you know, really be in the moment at that time. And I think that with endurance running, you know, myself being a, you know, I focus on 24-hour racing as well too, but just in a running sense, there's a mindlessness that needs to occur where you just you forget. And I remember in one of your videos, you said that. Do you think that you know, the gymnastics and the mindlessness of that, where you just keep hitting and hitting and hitting and not focusing the failures that just occurred, do you think that has a lot to contribute to your success as a 24-hour runner?
Yeah, I'm not really sure if it's gymnastic or if it's just my personality, but right, I tend right. to, when I do these like really hard events, when I look back on them, I don't recall the bad times, I recall the good times. And I feel like you need to have that to keep signing up for these things that are very much the type two fun, where like you feel really great when you're done, not right. so great sometimes in between. And it's important to really latch onto these feelings of feeling good and like kind of dismiss the parts that were a struggle, or like reform them in a way where they're more of a learning lesson, or like, oh, I learned these things in these races, I'll use that for the next one, versus like focusing on that, because then I think you would just do one.
Yeah, so let's talk. This is interesting. The dynamic of, you know, use the word stubborn, you know, which is interesting way of thinking about, you know, is it environmental? You know, you said you think it might just be me. Like, you have some friends, I'm sure, both competitors and people who don't compete. Do you think that it is a learned behavior to be sort of, you know, committed so that we don't quit, or stubborn so we don't quit, or whatever the words are, but that we keep going in spite of what the systems are saying? Oh boy, you know, it hurts, or you're tired, or, you know, the weather's bad. There's a lot of inputs that in the normal sort of rational brain says, oh, it's okay, we can, you know, it's not bad. We already did 12 hours. That's a good workout. So what the heck? You know, it's like, I didn't fail really. But then there's others who just would find that, you know, somewhat unconscionable. Do you think it's learned, or it's just some people are just, that's what they are?
I think it's both. I think you have to have a little bit of a predisposition to want to do things like that. But then also when you've done it enough, when you've reached enough finish lines that you thought you wouldn't, like, it's just such indescribable happiness. Like, I've had, I think every single ultra endurance finish line I've reached, I cried of happiness. And that just doesn't happen in life otherwise, I think, not at least not as often. I feel like if you're stubborn enough to get to one or two or three of those, then you kind of remember how good it feels and just how worth it is to actually push to get there. So I think it's a little bit of both. I think you have to have a little bit, and then every time you have a new experience like that, when you push over what you thought was capable, then I feel like that makes you seek more. So I think it's also kind of learned.
So I want to push a little harder on it, because I certainly, you know, Dave's the ultra runner. I've dabbled around myself, you know, 100-mile races, 200-mile races, all this stuff. And so we can sort of resonate with this feeling. And I think at least as I've gone along, and see if this is happening either to you, maybe even to Dave, which is that what we're starting to do is to prove to ourselves our own worthiness by standing up to the challenges we give to ourselves. That, you know, really, when you go off and do that, you know, most people wouldn't even know what you did anyway. They wouldn't even know the amount of time. It's like, oh, okay, that's great, Ray, awesome, glad you did, you know, like, then put on to the next issue. So, you know, the publicity, especially in small sports, is not a reason to do it. So I sort of wonder if you have that feeling, which is that much of what you've been on a path, which is, you know, so you started off as a gymnast working hard, then you left, come to the US and you study and accomplish a lot. Now you take this on. Is it about you proving to yourself your own sort of worthiness?
I think it's me proving to myself how much my body is capable. Mm-hmm. I think it's like a lot of the times I have this idea in my head and I'm like, shoot, I don't know if I can do this. And that kind of drives me to try to see if I can. So I think last month or a few weeks ago, I had this idea, could I ride from the front door to the top of a 14er? And it seemed like really crazy. And I was like, I don't really know if I can do it. So I didn't want to really invite anybody along, because if I couldn't, I just kind of wanted to, oh, well, that didn't happen. But it's, I think it's just this like curiosity almost, where the limits are and like, how far can I push myself before I have to stop? And I did this like 700-kilometer expedition adventure race, which really redefined what I think right now of possible. And I think it made me more open to trying crazier things. And I feel like every experience like that kind of just increases the limits of curiosity and how far can we go self-propelled, on a bike, on foot, say, swimming, paddling,
right,
like any combination of sports, really.
Which 14? So, yeah, so, Mount Evans, sorry.
Yeah.
No, no, no.
Evans.
Right up there. That's a good one. Good.
It was really.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. So Ray, you sound like a very curious person. I mean, you know, curiosity keeps, you know, pushing and you know, kind of opening up new envelopes and seeing really what the human body's capable. Rhea, how old are you?
29.
29 years old. So, you know, in the ultra running space, you know, typically people don't really reach, when it comes to 24 hours and beyond, they don't really reach their potential until they're 35 or 40, simply because, you know, just time, right? I firmly believe it takes like 7 years to build a strong ultra running base. So do you feel like your best years are ahead of you?
I feel like different years are ahead of me. I feel like, just, I don't know, moving to Colorado, I started trying so many different sports that right now just running isn't necessarily at the front of what I'm really interested in. Right now, I really love these multi-sport adventures. So I feel like every year has been like so different in terms of the events that I did. And a lot of them just sort of happened to me. Like, it was just opportunities that presented themselves. And I'm glad that I had the courage to say yes to things that I felt totally unprepared for. And every single time I did an event that was out of my comfort zone, I realized that there's something new I really love. And so that kind of led me to pursue that direction a little bit more. So I feel like I just want to keep living my life like that, where I'm really open to the new experiences that I might not be ready for at the moment, and then trying to improve on them. And I feel like what I've learned like the past 2 years especially is that it feels really, really, really good to be the best at something. So like when I won the Ultra World Championship, that was amazing. But I felt like it feels equally good to be really bad at something and then really improve. So I kind of find the same reward from both of these aspects. And of course, you need to have a little bit of both if you want to do this professionally. But I feel like being a professional athlete kind of opens that space for me to explore and to really try new things. And I feel like having a balance of both is really, really rewarding.
Yeah, well, you know, the fun part about it is that you can paint the canvas as you'd like it to be painted. Yeah. Especially with the variety of what's possible. And I do think that, you know, the being the best is always, of course, fun and rewarding. The whole sort of move towards this, which you touched on, this fastest known time, an FKT, a finding a challenge that's, you know, a big thing to go and do. Do you see, you know, because of course, we're now stuck with this COVID-19 challenge, you know, big races are not as available. Do you think that that's a good way for us to continue to get, you know, define the challenge, whether it is ride up to the top of a 14er, you know, you're going to do, I think you're going to go from Jackson across Jenny Lake up to the top of the Grand and then back.
Yeah, that's the plan for August.
Yeah, I've looked at that challenge quite a few times, and I think the swim back is the hard part.
That's what I heard, yeah.
But otherwise, those are really sort of, you know, amazing sort of events that don't need a crowd and don't need, you know, organization. Maybe we talk for a little bit about, you know, how we go off and create those in our own world so we can have some good challenge in our life.
Yeah, I think right now is actually a great time for things like that. I feel like it's kind of a break from structured races and kind of a break from people marking the course for you and kind of time to find the course for yourself. Mm-hmm. And I feel like right now people who love doing sports maybe love them even more because of that. And then people who love competition, I feel like they can find competition in these like self-defined challenges instead. So I feel like it's a opportunity to grow in a way.
Yeah, could still have some pretty tough races, no matter what you call them, right? You don't necessarily have to be organized to push yourself out there. You know, have you, in any of your events, have you ever thought of quitting?
Oh yeah, many times. I only didn't reach the finish line, I think, 2 or 3 times in races. But it's like, I'm not a fast starter. So like, usually I think of quitting within the first couple of miles of any race because everything hurts and I'm not warmed up and everybody's going super fast. And I just like, I can't, like, if I go for 8 hours or 8 miles, I will probably have the same top speed, really. So I feel like a lot of the times when I want to quit, I try and remind myself how bad it feels afterwards. So to me, quitting feels worse than any kind of pain I'm in currently. And that's usually enough to really keep me going. But really the race, the in Fiji that I did last year, the adventure race, it took us over a week to finish. And I feel like every day there was like some thought of like, why are we even doing this? But it was never in a way of like, I want to out. It was more like trying to find reasons to keep going, but never really truly believing that these reasons are enough to quit. And I feel like that's true of any race that I've done.
Yeah. So let's jump into that a little bit more. So let's like specifically, let's talk about, you know, the World Championships, the 24-hour in Sweden last year.
Yeah.
You know, when you're 18 hours in or 16, 18 hours in, that's a pretty dark spot period. It can be, and it most likely is for most people. You know, how are you managing the messages that are coming into your mind? You know, the ideas of slowing down or pulling back or quitting, or, you know, like for me personally, I always have the good enough syndrome. It's like, okay, yeah, this is good enough. I can definitely pull it back. You know, what are some of the tips and tricks that you would like to offer a lot of our listeners that really want to do something like what you're doing, and really say, how do I manage my thoughts and feelings and emotions and discomfort at you know, 3/4 of the way into a race like this?
Yeah, for these like 24-hour races, the Spartan Ultra World Championship in Sweden, the way the race works is it's a 5-mile loop. And so you keep doing that 5-mile loop over and over and over again until you're out of time. And so in a way that's really, really helpful because it's just this like manageable 5-mile chunk you have to complete. And so at the start of the race, I just focus on that. It's like I'm doing this 5 mile loop again. And then every lap I try to improve on something. So like, oh, I was a little slow there. I was a little inefficient there. I can fix this. Like this bar froze because it was too cold in the mountain. I need to figure out a different fuel. Like my glasses are fogging. There's just like so many technical difficulties that kind of takes your mind off of the fact that you're running this 5 mile loop over and over again. When it becomes challenging for me is when you're so close to the finish line that you start counting down the laps. I think that's always really, really dark spot for me, because when you're like, oh, I only have 2 more laps to go, it's almost your brain lets the pain guard down and everything starts hurting. And so like you start feeling things you wouldn't really be feeling before because you were so focused on solving all these problems to even get you anywhere close to the finish line. And so what happened this year, actually last year in 2018, I did a similar 24-hour race, but it was like put on by Tough Mudder. And at around, the race starts at noon and goes until the next day until noon. And at around 8:30, 9 a.m., I had enough lead that I could quit because nobody could actually catch me. So I quit. And I think I was like actually a little depressed for about a week because I felt so bad that I didn't give the race everything I had, and instead I raced for the win. And that wasn't really, I felt like I let myself down and I let others down, because I sort of go into those things to just see where my limits are, not necessarily how I can place. And so when I was in Sweden, that was one of my big goals, was just to really give the race everything I have, irrespective of the placing and irrespective of where I'm standing or if I'm leading the race. And so it was around 9 a.m. again where I did the math and I realized I didn't have to go out on another lap and like win the race. But I remember just how bad I felt last year doing that. And so when I was debating whether or not to go out, I was like, if I don't go out, I'm not, I could walk another lap. So if right. I don't go walk another lap, I'm not giving my race everything I have. And so I feel like having a goal defined that you can then go back to, like for me, it was giving it my everything. I feel like that's really important to have something that you can remember when you're in, maybe that's good enough.
Right. And I think that you finish off your what you just said there, which was brilliant. And I'm trying to take that in. And it's also seeing this as myself as an ultra endurance runner. Because you just use the word enough at the end. And I think that expectations and shame are a very, very big part of any endurance athlete. Because, you know, we need to define ourselves like what is enough, right? Because it's really never enough. And that's a big, big problem, because there's always something more. And the more I'm listening to you, Rhea, is that, you know, I'm understanding that, you know, you're defining for yourself really what is enough. As an athlete, like where's that edge, and how do I self-actualize what that next thing is that I need to do? Is that a reasonable statement? And really, can you describe for yourself, like, you know, for you as an athlete, what is enough?
Yeah, I hope one day I can do something where I reach the finish line or where I reach the end of the goal that I set for myself, and I can say I could not have taken a step further.
Right.
I think that's the ultimate goal. I'm still
absolutely. And sorry to jump in here, but that's exactly what Joe and I were talking about right before this conversation. Is that, you know, myself I've run 161 miles in 24 hours. Like I've done some pretty significant things, but yet I've never felt that I've given enough. And there's always more to give. And so I keep setting the bar a little bit higher and a little bit higher. But I see that you, and these are the things that you end up, when you talk to athletes like yourself, Rhea, is that, you know, it's never really enough. Would you say that that's pretty accurate?
Yeah, I feel like that's what drives us. I don't think we'd keep doing these things over and over again if you weren't looking for something that's beyond of what you've done before.
So if you could describe like what is enough, you would have a definition, but it's something that maybe you can't really see yourself getting to, because once you get there, then you're going to reassess that. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's really well said. And in a way, I feel like we're almost all doing ourselves the service, because I feel like every time you do something bigger and better and like more epic than the things that you've done before, kind of lose their appeal. And so I feel like we're all gravitating towards longer, harder, faster. And I wonder what happens if you do reach that limit. I wonder right. if you can go back, or I wonder if that limit maybe doesn't exist. So
you know, I think James Lawrence, who did the 50 Ironman races in 50 days in 50 states, I think he said he might have had 6 more days left in him, and then he would have actually been impossible to continue. Like, his body was falling apart at that point.
Yeah.
So I do think there's some physical piece, but most of us will probably never go that far. You know, what I find interesting, so one of the perspectives, see if you can agree or not, but I did this challenge a couple of years ago. I ran a marathon on 6 continents across 6 days. So and sort of flew around the world and ran every place I landed in.
Oh, I heard of that. That's awesome.
Yeah, so at the end, you know, I didn't feel that bad. And someone I was talking to today said, well, you clearly didn't push yourself enough. And I'm like, oh, well, okay, you're probably right. But what I remember the most clearly about the event was when I started, I wrote on a yellow sticky pad that the lows will be the highs. You know, that what I was really seeking was not the satisfaction of the completion, but how deep do you go and what does that feel like? It's a different kind of curiosity that I think we're seeking. That's what we're looking for, is the low. And if we can find it, that's actually a high for us, because it was a process to get there and a process to come back out. Mm. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree. I feel like every race that was really, really hard, the parts that I'm proud of are the hard parts, because you got yourself there, and then you got out of those things, mm-hmm. out of those places, and then you finished. And I feel like that's the beauty of the sport. Like, you can push yourself to these things that make you so happy that don't really require, you know, like, much of anything else other than will and, I guess, the equipment that you need. But
yeah
I agree with what you said.
So maybe tell us specifically about one of those experiences where you were in despair, or you were really willing to, you know, ready to quit, and then you didn't, and you came out of that. Can you tell us specifically about one of those?
Yeah, since we were talking about the 24-hour Ultra World Championship, it was in the morning on the second day. I thought I maybe could finish on that lap, because I had enough miles, enough lead. And so I came down towards the finish line arena, and I saw my friend, who's also a course director. And so I ran to him, and I was crying, and I was like, Steve, I can't go anymore. I don't want to go anymore. And he was like, love, you don't have to. And then I was like, yeah, he's right. I don't really have to. But then reevaluating everything and about my goals and everything, I realized that externally I might not have to, but internally I did. And so I feel like, pushing, I feel like having those goals that maybe are not very, people might not understand, and it's not very obvious why you're doing things, but if they're internally justified, I feel like that's how you get yourself out of these really dark moments. And it's usually, I feel like the more of those events you do now, even on like training runs or like long adventures, you know that like no really, really dark spot is permanent. It never hurts forever. It eventually, mm-hmm. even though it seems like, you know, your body can fix itself if you're doing more of the same thing, it somehow usually does, and things stop hurting. And then if you push through that, I feel like then finishing or doing a little bit of extra is worth so much more.
Right.
Yeah, you know, the ultra community, you know, I had been through the marathon community, then the triathlon community. I found myself in the ultra community. I've done OCR races. What is it like? Because I find the ultra community extremely supportive. You know, the longer you go, the more supportive people seem to be.
Yeah.
We're a little less worried about the bling and, you know, the haircut than the suit, than we are just sort of like getting through it, being there. How do you feel about the OCR community as you go longer, or the ultra community, and this, even the adventure racing? What's it like for you?
The OCR community is really, really supportive no matter the distance. And I feel like the reason for that is because it's this like common trying to figure out how to get over obstacles. Mm. thing that we all have to do. And so a lot of the times on Fridays before races, there's an open house where everybody can come play on the obstacles. And so you like talk about strategies, you look at like different lanes, figure out what's like the best strategy for the next day. And I feel like that camaraderie of solving the same problem and all having to do the same course, I feel like that's what makes the community really supportive. And I feel like that's kind of similar to ultra running, where it might not necessarily be like man-built obstacles, but it's like, oh, like really bonking hard at mile 50, or like when it's really hot out, how do you solve that obstacle? So I feel like it's things like this where it's like shared knowledge and just working together, almost kind of like a team sport really, but still competing individual, because at the end of the day, usually like the best person that day still wins, and that doesn't really matter whether or not you're supportive and nice to one another. And I feel like that really is what makes these sports so great.
No, and I agree, Rhea. And just speaking from experience, I was at Big's backyard last year. And backyard style racing is, well, it sounds like you know all about it. And yeah, so it's 6.7 kilometers or 4.18 miles every hour until you can't. And I was there amongst 75 other stubborn sons of bitches. And they, you know, you line up with these people and everybody's doing it together. You're doing the same loop. And it's really, you know, in the end, it diminishes and diminishes and diminishes. And I got third place there. So I was in the final grouping. And, you know, it was so cool because when somebody would drop out around you, you actually got pretty emotional because you were pretty upset. You're like, no, just get out and do one more, right? And it's a pretty cool community. Have you had any meaningful, really great relationships that have come from OCR racing, some of your best friends? Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, I feel like it's still a pretty young sport. So all of the people who are racing the races are all the same people. So we all travel to the same races. We see each other. Like last year, I raced once, twice a month, and I saw all the same of my friends. And so you become really, really good friends with everybody, especially because we all have really bad races. And so we kind of understand each other of how it feels. And it's really hard to describe to somebody how cold it feels. Like last year, the world championship was in Squaw Valley, and it was 10 degrees Fahrenheit on top of the mountain. It was snowing and we had to do an alpine lake swim, and then we had to roll in the snow. And I've never been so cold in my life, and things like that are really hard to explain to other people unless they've done the same thing. And so I feel like it creates this community of people with shared experiences. And I feel like that really what makes us such great friends. I compete against all of those other ladies, but when you're not racing, we're all like really, really good friends. And I feel like that's actually one thing I really missed this year. I might not necessarily miss putting the timing bib on twice a month, but I do miss seeing my friends and everything that happens at a race outside of the race itself.
Yeah, we try to stay away from talking too much about the COVID-19 and this pandemic we're living through. But has it evolved your training a little bit? And how do you stay so committed to staying at a high level without the races? How's that affecting you?
I feel like it's the first real off season I've had since 2016, because our racing season is pretty long. It usually starts in February and goes until end of November. So it's the first time that I actually have a little bit of a break. And I don't really train for racing. I feel like racing is for me more a side effect of training. I train because I love being fit enough to be able to find an adventure and say, let's go do it. Mm-hmm. And now I get to find these adventures and I have time to go do them. So to me, like, motivation to train is like all the places you can see, not necessarily how fast can you get from point A to point B.
Yeah, it's about how we choose to live, right? It's a ready state. We always like living in the ready state, you know?
Yeah.
Tomorrow Dave could run a marathon if he needs to, and he doesn't have to train for it, you know?
Yeah.
If I ran one this morning, for all we know.
Probably. Did you?
No, I didn't. I'm tapering for a race this weekend. I should talk you into doing it too. It's a fun virtual backyard race, but we'll take this offline. I think you'd do great at backyard racing, because it's really about answering the bell, right?
Yeah.
It's managing the stimulus as it comes in and just not quitting and going out and doing another one. And so do you think that, Rhea, you know, your background and in your success with the further, the longer races, you know, what I'm curious about with you is how are you managing that stimulus as you come in? Like, let's go back to that 18-hour mark of the last 24-hour race that you did. When you're at that point and that stimulus is coming in, and I understand that, okay, you're doing a 5-mile loop and you just focus on that. But what are some of the messages that come in, and what are some of the tactics that you end up using? Is there any one mantra that comes up over and over again? Do you sink within the now and become mindless within that moment? Do you forget about what's happened in the past and not focus on what's happening in the future? Like, what are some of your tricks and tips to managing that stimulus?
I really just focus on very immediate current state. So for like the 24-hour Ultra World Championship, I would focus on like one obstacle at a time. So I'd be like, okay, let's shuffle to those monkey bars. All right, now let's take deep breaths, take the gloves off, do the monkey bars, put the gloves back on. So it becomes very automated. And I focus on the small little tasks that I know I can do. Like, I know I can take my gloves off now. I know I can start with the first bar. Okay, now I know I can swing to the second bar. So it's just breaking the whole thing down to like maybe 10 seconds at a time and just focusing on that and just trying not to think about anything else. Mm-hmm. And then there's also, I guess there's that. And then it's also juxtaposed with like little things I'm really looking forward to. So like every hour and a half, I get to have like a little bit of caffeine. Every 2 hours, I get to have a little bit of a painkillers. Mm-hmm. Every like 2 hours, I have another PB&J sandwich. And it's just little rewards like that. Or like looking forward to a Nutella crepe I'm going to have when I get to the pit stop.
Right.
So it's kind of like a combination of a little bit of both, really focusing on the reward of getting the lap done, but while I'm on the lap, focusing at just like very immediate current situation and not thinking about the next obstacle.
Well, and I think that's what's beautiful about, and this is why I think that, Rhea, like the world right now is under turmoil. I mean, we're in quarantine, COVID-19 is a real big issue. And this is something that, you know, I'm turning 40 this year, I've never had to go through anything like this in my life, and hopefully never will. But you know, the ability to endure, you know, is now all of us are having to do it. I'm noticing a lot of my friends and myself personally, I'm going through relative turmoil here and there, managing all these different aspects of my life that I've never had to deal with before. So I think that a lot of the time, the average person all around the world is now looking to endurance athletes for those skills and those tricks and those tips of okay, how do we manage all the messages that are coming in here and there? How do we create little, you know, like you were saying, just what do I need to do in the moment to get through? It's almost like getting out of the bed and putting your socks on. Okay, I can do that. Now what do I do? And then how do we create little rewards? You know, that Nutella crepe that you were talking about. That's beautiful. I completely agree with you. And so I think that those little nuggets for you and me and Joe, you know, it's our regular everyday life. But I think that those messages that we can end up giving to the world are really invaluable at a time like this. Would you tend to agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And another big thing is also in races like that and in life, I try to ignore things I can't change. So
right.
If I can't do anything about it, I just pretend the thing isn't there. So if my knee really hurts and I can't do anything other than take a painkiller about it, then I'm just going to ignore it. And I feel like it's the same with life and everything. Like if you can't change it, then try not to worry about it. And instead of focus your energy on the little things that you can change. And I feel like that's true of racing.
Let's talk nutrition for a second. So, you know, 24 hours or anything long or a number of days, what's your sort of nutrition plan? What works for you, you know, both in the lead up, during, you know, any go-tos that you like?
Yeah, I feel like every single race that I've done, I was like, I really nailed that nutrition. And then I tried to replicate that at the second race and then it totally doesn't work. So I feel like what I found was I like to have a plan A, but then have a suitcase of plan B for when the plan A fails.
Yeah.
So the first year I would eat peanut butter jelly sandwiches the whole time, and I was great. And then the second time I couldn't eat that at all because my stomach just said no to those. And so I ate rice with soy sauce a lot. And then in Sweden, it was actually really, really hard because it was, I think, 22 Fahrenheit outside at the bottom of the mountain and a lot less at the top, and everything froze. So I couldn't do my let's eat a snack every hour because I couldn't bring anything on the lap because everything froze. And so in Sweden, what I did was every 5 miles, which ended up being every like an hour and a half to 2 hours, I'd be back in the pit where it was warm. And so I just smashed like a full backcountry meal or something. So I'd like have 700 calories in 2 minutes and then try and like not throw them all up by the time I could have digested on the lap. And so I feel like having for these long events, like sometimes it's energy gel, sometimes it's bars, sometimes it's chips and quesadillas. And I feel like you have to be open to just taking in calories, whichever form they come in, and have an assortment of different flavors, different consistencies, different everything, really. The mistake that I did at the Expedition Adventure Race was I thought variety meant variety of flavors. So I brought a bunch of different flavor boba bars, and I had one boba bar an hour for 4 days, and it's been half a year and I still can't see a boba bar near me.
No,
never touch it again. We all can relate.
Yeah. So I feel like just variety is key in getting the calories in no matter what.
Right.
It's such an interesting part of the topic and the entirety of what we do. You know, everyone says, oh, well, you know, you're this really healthy person, whatever that might mean. But how could you eat that? And really it's about survival. I think food and racing endurance is survival. It's not, I think Dave said, you said this on a podcast or whatever, you said that, you know, the best ultra runner is the best eater.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I was telling you, Joe, like I'm supposed to right now, but because of COVID-19, I'm supposed to be running across the country in record time across Canada. And so it's more of an eating contest than it is a running contest. That was told me by Pete Kostelnik. He's got the Trans-American speed record by running from San Francisco to New York City. And he said, you know, ultimately, you're only as good of a runner as you are an eater, because you have to take in 10,000 calories of food a day. And if you can end up eating, you know, a bucket of ice cream and still run, you're golden.
Yeah.
So
that's an interesting part of it. But I like sort of teasing it out. It doesn't mean that on a Wednesday night when we ran a 3K, a 5K, that we would be eating a gallon of ice cream. But what it means is that we're putting our systems under such strain. And the part that I find fascinating, because I've been doing this for, you know, 20 years, is that you're right. The point of one race doesn't predict what's going to work the next time is really the most bizarre part about it, though. It's like, it feels the same. And then why didn't the peanut butter and jelly work, you know? And and you just have to react to the moment and eat what works, because you won't get to the finish line, and that is, or hydration for that matter as well. And so it's a learned lesson. It's hard to know that one until you do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But and I agree with you, Rhea. It's a lot of the time it's listening to your body and saying, oh, peanut butter and jelly isn't working today, but I really want, you know, a bean quesadilla, and that might be it. And so great. Have that available as well too.
Yeah, it's good to have the backup plan. So now we're you know, halfway through 2020. You know, we're really not sure when we get back to whatever normal would be defined as. You know, so it's probably a 2021 racing calendar. You have a couple of good challenges. Is 2021 going to be, you know, a big racing year back to OCR and trying to win the world championship again?
I really don't know. I feel like it's hard for me to say right now, because I'm having so much with these, like so much fun with these self-defined adventures, that if I could just keep that going forever, I would. I would definitely come back to some sort of organized racing, just because I miss the community. And there's just like, these events are really also about coming together as much as they are about racing, and I miss that. But I feel like it's so unpredictable. Like if you told me I'd be doing what I'm doing today last year, I'd probably laugh. That I don't like making plans. I'm gonna wait until the races are out, see where I'm at, and then sign up for things that really excite me and that make me, you know, so excited about the day after that I can't fall asleep the night before, and stick with that, I think.
I like that plan. That's a good one. I think we should, we can all sort of learn from that, you know, and have even the best of plans like we had this year. We've all evolved and continue to roll forward. So as we sort of always end, you know, our podcast, we always want to talk a little bit about this idea of chasing tomorrow. You know, you're early in your journey and you've done a lot of really cool stuff. Big, of course, winning is always fun and big challenges. What are your thoughts on this idea of chasing tomorrow? What would that mean to you? And how does that sort of affect, you know, both how you'll live and how others can think?
I think for me, what that would mean is finding new adventures and new things you're excited about, no matter what you've done before. So not getting complacent with things that you've done, but instead look for things that you can do in the future. And I feel like even though there are a lot of, like, I feel like a lot has already been done, it's really hard to be the first one to do something. I feel like there are a lot of things that can be the first for you and can be defined as the first in some way or another. And so I feel like chasing tomorrow can be anything that makes you excited about the next day and, you know, like be excited about the 4 a.m. alarm clock, even if that means a little bit less sleep. Yeah, I think that's it.
Well, yeah, that's cool. I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I'm really enjoying listening to you. And, you know, what I see with you with chasing tomorrow is curiosity and defining what's enough. And, you know, I don't think those, either one of those has really a limit. So I'm really excited to watch your career as it evolves and to really keep up to date with you when it comes to your journey. This is really exciting.
Yeah. You have two new big fans and, we will not only stay in touch, cause we do spend time in Colorado, but, we'll have to have you back on again in the future and hear of all the great and interesting challenges you took on and how they worked out for you. So thanks very much for joining us today. And we look forward to reading about you and seeing new YouTube videos coming up.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you for having me. It was great chatting with you too. And I look forward to keeping up with everything you guys accomplish as well.
All right. We got a good crew going here. We'll see you soon. Thanks.
Thank you, Rhea.
Thank you.
Well, Dave, that was interesting. Rhea is quite the athlete, competitor, and just an amazing person. I truly enjoyed hearing her stories and how she's learning and growing in her sport. We're going to have to keep track of her adventures and FKT attempts, and it'll be awesome to see her on Echo Challenge on TV later this month. Well, episode 6 is then officially in the books, and it's time to get our next guest teed up. I'm truly enjoying meeting all these amazing people, as I'm sure you are too. Well, that's a wrap. As always, a big shout out to our sponsor, Performance Tea. You can find them on www.performancetea.com. And they've given us a discount code for any of our listeners to get 20% off their purchase. Just use CHASING20, CHASING20, to get the discount. And a huge thanks to our listeners for coming with us on this journey and chasing tomorrow with us. Thanks.